Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews about and sounds of Chicago government. I'm Dave Gloetz. In this episode, we'll hear excerpts from the June meeting of the Chicago City Council. We'll hear aldermen talk about a proposed reparations commission and hear them admonish their colleagues about racism. In addition, we'll hear an excerpt from a formerly confidential briefing held between Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot and many of the Chicago aldermen. That conversation was supposed to be just between all of them, not for public consumption, but it was leaked, and we'll hear parts of that. All that in the context of an interview done with me by the host of The Ben Jarofsky Show. Here's the episode.
Dave Gloetz, we used to talk bicycling, but now we talk city politics, and he does an outstanding job of listening, following, tracking the Chicago City Council, and then preparing some excellent reports for us, and then we do a riff. So Dave, I'm going to turn things over to you for the setup.
Today I'm reporting, Ben, on the City Council meeting that took place on June 17th, and of course, it was via video conference. It was a pretty long meeting. There are getting to be usually 3 to 4 hours these days. This one was typical in that way. And we're going to talk about a few things that the council passed. One of the first things I'd like to talk about, an ordinance that the council passed has to do with a proposal put forth by the Mayor Lori Lightfoot administration that calls for a provisional moratorium on tenant evictions. Evictions due to failure on the part of a tenant to pay rent due to some impact by the COVID-19 virus, then this ordinance would apply. This ordinance passed 37 to 12. So that's, as you know, Ben, a pretty big amount of opposition. And there's a particular reason for that that is exemplified by the remarks of Alderman Emma Mitz of the 37th Ward, which is on the west side. That's roughly between Grand Avenue and Kidzie Street. And let's listen with what she had to say.
Alderman Mitz.
Thank you, Madam President. At least I get to be heard today. I wasn't a member of the Housing Committee, and of course, I didn't even get a chance to state my concerns. I guess they wasn't relevant enough. But today, I will tell you that I am truly concerned, particularly because in the community where I live at, it's mostly 2 3-flat homes here. And to have a neighborhood that's already been disinvested in, to have to forego being able to get that rental assistance or be able to pay their mortgage, I'm very concerned because seniors have worked all their life for this. I'm not against their tenants being able to receive some assistance. I'm just saying, in this neighborhood, I don't want to see any more vacant buildings, homeowners losing a building, or turnover. So, and having said that, at this point, I would vote no on this.
So Alderman Mitz pretty much represents the argument made by people who are concerned about small business landlords, so namely owner-occupied 2 or 3 flats, and this ordinance will let their tenants, in some cases, skip rent. Mitz and others say, well, what are these building owners going to do if they rely on those payments to make their mortgage payments or their real estate tax payments? That's an argument that many opponents had. Another interesting thing about it, I don't know if you noticed, she said at the beginning that she finally gets to speak on this, where she didn't feel she could.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason she said that is that this ordinance had what's called a direct introduction. In other words, what often happens is when the administration is sponsoring an ordinance, they will usually, or often, introduce it at a city council meeting, like the one we're talking about. And then it gets assigned to a committee and the text of it gets disseminated in advance. That didn't happen this time. This thing got introduced 2 days before the city council meeting. There was a housing committee meeting. So that's what Mitz is talking about. It's like, you know, this all happened pretty quick and I didn't get a chance. So that's one of the things that she's not happy about.
37-12. Now, this is interesting. So people should follow following this at home. Emma Mitz, as Dave has said, is an alderman from the West Side, and she was a very close ally of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. The fact that she is willing to vote against the mayor is just one more indication of how the Chicago City Council is, what, feeling its oats in the age of Lori Lightfoot. Now, I welcome this, Dave. You know, you and I have had many conversations about my belief that aldermen should feel they could speak out against the mayor.
We call it democracy.
Call it small-d democracy. Now, Emma Mitz is the alderman, follow me this, everybody, I'm going to go back in time, who is championing the police academy. She wanted a police academy put in her ward. The property was purchased with TIF funds. I believe Dave and I have talked about this in past shows. She prevailed over the opposition, which was just like the emerging voice of opposition on policing issues in the city of Chicago. If you remember these debates, Dave, that went back to, I think it was 2017 or 2018, and Chance the Rapper.
That thing still hasn't been built either.
That, well, welcome to TIF. That's a whole other story. TIF projects that are delayed in being built. So, in effect, it was a big symbolic issue because the argument articulated in that debate that Chance the Rapper was the most prominent person who was putting this issue forth is that, why are we spending money building a training facility for police, so effectively spending the money on police, when we have so many other compelling needs, not the least of which is mental health? We close mental health facilities, and we're instead spending money building a new training center for police. So symbolically, that was an offensive contrast. Emma Mitz spoke up for that training center. She said her neighborhood needed it. She got the votes to pass it overwhelmingly. I think Carlos Ramirez Rosa may have been the only vote against it in the face of Chance the Rapper and many opponents. So it's just interesting, Dave. Here we are a year or two later, a new era, a new mayor, and she's speaking up for residents in her ward. I would just point out that there might be more money in the kitty to help landlords in two flats deal with a loss of rent because of a pandemic. There might be more money for assistance if we weren't dedicating money into TIF program to build a police center. That, just throw that out there, Dave, a guy who never forgets anything.
Which has exactly been an argument made by opponents to this ordinance. They say that you can do this rental assistance. I mean, it should be done. I think everyone listening to this would agree that that's a good thing. But why not, as you say, couple it with landlord assistance so nobody gets screwed? One more thing is maybe Alderman Mitz is pissed off that that academy has not been built yet. So maybe she's getting back. Well, shall we move on?
Yes.
Another thing that the council passed on the 17th was a resolution that calls for the establishment of a commission. And this commission is called the Chicago Descendants of Enslaved Africans Reparations Commission. And if you're keeping score at home, this resolution number is SR2019-694. This started in September, the path of this resolution. It began in the City Council's Health and Human Resources Committee, and I believe it was an outgrowth of a national movement, which I'm sure you're aware of, Ben, to pay reparations to people descended from African slaves brought to the U.S. Proponents in Chicago have wanted, for quite a while, an ordinance that lays out, here's the benefits that we're going to be paying to those descendants. But what they got this month at the City Council is they got a commission, or resolution to do a commission, actually, and that is the first step. And we're going to listen to Alderman Jason Irvin talk about this particular resolution before the vote took place. And let's listen.
Alderman Irvin.
Thank you, Madam President. As it relates to this resolution and ordinance, I want to ask that Alderman Napolitano and Alderman Spezzato strongly reconsider their no vote on this item. Reparations is a subject. It's a conversation. And I think to deny the conversation, I think in the time that we face, is somewhat a slap in the face to the members of the African-American community, not only in the city of Chicago, but nationally. So I would strongly hope that they would consider that.
I'm just going to caution you. We're now getting into, I think, going beyond your appropriate bounds. I think your point is taken. You ask for a reconsideration. You can do that through the chair, but I think anything further is not appropriate in this moment.
Madam President, I do understand your position. I would just say that I'm just asking for them to reconsider their position.
Wow.
So what's going on here, Ben, is that the proponents of this resolution were trying to get a unanimous vote, but there were two holdouts, and those were Alderman Anthony Napolitano of the 41st Ward and Nick Spezzato of the...
Oh, you're asking me?
38th. Very good.
He used to be the 36th, but he was...
Let's not go there.
Okay. Sorry.
But those two held out. Notice that it wasn't 47-3. The absent alderman was Alderman Kerry Austin. And I don't know if it's anything to do with it, but it's coincidental that the city council meeting took place almost to the day, 1 year after the feds executed a search warrant on her office. But anyway, we hear Alderman Irvin try to prevail with Napolitano and Spezzato, which he didn't. And then at the very end, we hear Mayor Lightfoot playing the parliamentarian. Which she seems to be doing quite a bit of lately.
This is fascinating, and we could probably do an entire show on this. And I'm going to try to be as concise as I can, but it's going to be very difficult because just listening to Jason Irvin and then Lori Lightfoot's response, do we have any clips of Spezzato or Napolitano addressing this issue?
No, we don't.
Okay.
We are, however, next going to talk about Alderman Napolitano's resolution.
Then I'll hold off on them and just talk about the issue of reparations. The issue of reparations, of course, is a national issue that the country as a whole should be facing. So it's not just the city of Chicago. But Chicago has special significance in this matter because one of the reasons why we're even having this discussion of reparations is a very powerful essay that Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote for, I believe it was The Atlantic. I forget how many years ago it was. I remember when I read it, Dave, it had a profound impact on me. It was a call for reparations. In making his argument for reparations, he came to Chicago. He set most of the article in Chicago, and he retold a very sordid history, a very embarrassing history about race relations in the city of Chicago that had to do with the way black people were treated on the West Side when they tried to buy homes. And they didn't really get, they couldn't get conventional mortgages, so they had to go to these secondary type mortgages where they were totally exploited by the people lending them the money. And so after putting money down and believing they were buying their home, they had no equity and they lost the house. Coach used that as an argument to show how difficult it was because of racism and redlining and discriminatory banking policies for black people, even in the 20th century, to get a leg up in Chicago. And it was in a way in which white people don't even realize that they have an advantage over black people. White people will never confront the notion that because of their race, they won't get a bank loan. Because of their race, they can't put their money toward owning a home. So this is like this most essential American dream to own your home and have property and use that as a form of investment that you could pass on to your children so that your family has wealth and one generation is wealthier than another was denied to black people in the 20th century, in our lifetime, Dave in my lifetime, not Dennis. He's too young. Although redlining is still going on.
And in that respect, I want to give a shout out to our colleague Linda Lutton at WBEZ Radio, who just did a powerful series about what you just said. She showed data that banks are not loaning residential loans, home loans, to people in black neighborhoods in Chicago.
I've been meaning to bring Linda Lutton back on the show to talk about that. Thank you for the reminder. It's only appropriate, I think, given the fact of Coates' article was centered in Chicago and talked about this very real disadvantage that black people faced, which is clearly a legacy of the racism of slavery. It's just so appropriate that Chicago would confront its history on this matter. And I share Jason Irvin's disappointment in the colleagues, his two colleagues in the city council. And Nick Spezzato is an old friend of mine, but I was disappointed that they didn't join. It's just a resolution. If nothing else, it's showing your solidarity to your colleague. He's making a direct personal appeal to you. And to hold out at that point, I think is disrespectful, not just to your colleague, but to the issue. It's a very important issue. I just recall going back in time to that vote. And Dave, you and I have talked about it. And I think you were at the Hideout when Scott Wagasback talked about it. The pressure Alderman Scott Wagasback took when he was a rookie alderman in the Chicago City Council to be one of the 50 aldermen lining up to vote for that cockamamie Olympics, where the city was basically agreeing to sign over a blank check for Mayor Daley's Olympics. And they put so much pressure on him because they wanted a 50-0 to send a message to the International Olympic Committee that Chicago was willing to bankrupt itself. That's how much it wanted the Olympics. They were going to dedicate untold billions of dollars to this scheme, this dream of Daley. And I just find contrasting that moment where they twisted Scott's arm to make it unanimous, whereas in the case of Jason Urban, he tries to make a direct appeal and it falls on deaf ears. So I'm very disappointed in Nick Spezzato and Napolitano. And come on, Lori. Oh, my God. Dave, it's so funny. She's like, okay, we're going to be respectful here. Have you heard the exchange between Lori Lightfoot and our good friend Raylo?
We're going to talk about that.
Okay, all right. So given that exchange...
I want an answer. Yeah. It's not something you ignore.
I think you're 100% full of shit.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Well, this is a perfect segue to the next audio segment. I really don't have much to preface. Alderman Sophia King of the 4th Ward also made comments about this commission resolution, and let's hear what she had to say.
I've noticed that in the middle of a pandemic, people are protesting all over the world, putting their lives at risk because they're trying to squash an even larger and more pervasive and contagious virus, another virus that renders us unable to breathe, especially when a knee is on our neck, a virus that we all know called racism. A racism that emboldens a woman in Central Park to weaponize her whiteness, to let a black man know that she can essentially have him killed simply by calling the police. I had to think about that for a while, but that's really what it was. A racism that allows Tulsa, Oklahoma to be blown up by a racist government, and then for that history to be essentially erased from the history books. A racism that continues to allow for the disenfranchisement of Black and Brown people in our city. So I'd like to challenge members of this city council on Juneteenth or whenever to learn some true history, especially about African American history and the contributions and the dissemination of wrong information and the murder at the hands of really your ancestors, white people's ancestors. So that you can serve your constituents better, so that you can serve our city better. We will not truly heal as a city until we recognize and continue to put policies and resources in place that mitigate the systemic racism that still exists and that white people have benefited from and continue to benefit from. You can't say that we had nothing to do with the decisions of our ancestors and yet continue to benefit from the atrocities of your ancestors. It doesn't work both ways.
Well, Ben, you echoed Alderman King, or she echoed you in your previous point.
Yeah, and I would take it one step further. Very powerful remarks she was making, and she was addressing the larger issue of race relations in this country. I'll take it back to Chicago. White people, whether they realize it or not, are also victimized. Not, of course, nearly as much as black people, but this insane legacy we have of racial fear and prejudice has worked against white people. Dave, when I first moved to Chicago in 81, it was about 10 years after Matt. You know this because you're from Chicago. Dave is actually from Chicago. He's a real Chicagoan, born here, went to high school here, everything. You saw how neighborhoods changed. You know what the history of panic peddling is in this city. Integration lasts for as long as it takes the first black family to move on the block and the last white family to sell and haste and flee. There are a lot of white people who were panicked out of neighborhoods, sold their homes probably for less than they're worth. So obviously, white people in Chicago are aware on some level of the legacy of racism in their city. To pretend that they're not, that it doesn't affect them, I think they're kidding themselves.
Well, but you were talking about the cost to white people. And I think that, yes, white people may feel that these episodes in the 20th century into the 21st century has costed them. But I don't think they see it quite the way that perhaps you and I see it, where they see themselves as victims, not of racism, but victims of different people coming into their neighborhoods. Many feel like they are victims, but not in the way that you and I are talking about, I don't think.
I don't know if this generation is still around, but when I first moved to Chicago, I did many interviews with white people, white ethnics, as that group was called back then, which I always thought was funny, that this was white ethnics as opposed to any other white people. Aren't they ethnic too of some kind? But anyway, whatever, be that as it may. I heard many tale about being the victim of panic peddlers. That was a common theme. In fact, there were programs instituted in the northwest and southwest sides of Chicago to, quote-unquote, protect people from panic-peddling realtors, insurance programs that would guarantee the value of a home in the case of a black family moving onto the block. I mean, this is the history of race in real estate in the city of Chicago. It impacts black people the most, absolutely, but it also impacts white people.
But those white people were panicked not just over the loss of the value of their homes. They were panicked over being surrounded by the other, by people not like them.
Yes, that's true. That's in their minds, yes.
This conversation that we're having about racism and the effects of racism in Chicago leads very well into what we're going to listen to next. Several things happen this month in June that set the stage for what we're going to hear. This conversation, this national conversation around race, has dovetailed or has led to a national conversation to what's called defund the police. And that means different things to different people, but basically, people who are having this conversation are talking about reallocating resources from police departments nationwide to things like social services, mental health services, and the like. What happened in June is on June 10th, Alderman Anthony Napolitano of the 41st Ward, who we talked about a moment ago, announced that he'll introduce a resolution calling for what he named the Police Reallocation Pilot Program, which he wanted the Lightfoot administration to develop and then submit to the city council for approval. This resolution is R2020-445, for those keeping score. And I have Alderman Napolitano's resolution right here, and I'll read from it.
Love it when you crinkle paper.
It says, the program will allow each individual alderman to choose to forego all or a portion, but no less than 50%, of Chicago Police Department personnel, services, and resources allocated to their respective ward for the duration of the program, and any CPD resources deferred from wards as part of the program will be evenly distributed, perhaps he should have said redistributed, across all non-participating wards before the program begins. And at the end of the program, the mayor and police superintendent will furnish a report detailing violent crime statistics by each ward. He announced that he was going to introduce that resolution on June 10th as sort of an obvious pushback against this defund police narrative. The very next day, on June 11th, Mayor Lightfoot held a press conference where she was outraged by a revelation by Congressman Bobby Rush that he had video recording from a campaign office of his that's on the south side. It's at roughly the Dan Ryan at 55th Garfield, where it shows about a dozen police officers hanging out in the campaign office for what he said was 4 to 5 hours on this video, while, according to the mayor, there was looting going on in this shopping mall. And during this press conference, when the mayor became very, like I said, very angry and was using this as an excuse, perhaps, to try to propel some police reforms ahead, Congressman Rush complained that not only were these cops lounging, literally, there were photos of this video recording. There wasn't actual video shown, and that's not been available. But Rush complained that these cops, not only were they lounging, but they used his coffee maker to make coffee, and they used his popcorn to pop popcorn. It was an outrage, you know. So that was at that press conference. Well, a few days later, on June 15th, Alderman Napolitano did an interview on WGN-TV to push his resolution that I talked about a moment ago. And I guess it was done via, you know, a typical video conferencing mechanism. And so the camera that Napolitano had on himself had him posing with several boxes of popped popcorn in the foreground and a popcorn maker behind him. And Ben, I'm sure you've seen this photo, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What we're going to listen to now is comments by Alderman Leslie Hairston of the 5th Ward in her remarks before the Reparation Commission vote, where she said exactly how she feels about all of this. And let's listen.
Most recently this weekend, I watched two of my colleagues on TV making fun of the looting in the city of Chicago, talking about their legislation. And while they have a right to introduce any legislation that they want, it was insensitive and inappropriate to do so with boxes of popcorn, making light of a bad situation, of a horrendous situation. That is not acceptable. There was nothing funny about what happened in our neighborhoods, in the Black neighborhoods, nothing to make light. And the fact that you had popcorn and the other one of you invited people to your office for popcorn and coffee is insensitive. And I've heard on the news that they keep talking about, well, there was an invitation to come into the office. Even if that was the case, the invitation was not for them to sit and do nothing and watch mayhem happen around them and watch the looting for 5 hours.
Leslie Harrison, Fifth Ward. Wow. Again, we do a whole show on this. What we're seeing in the Chicago City Council, and I haven't seen this really. I mean, you could go back to the 60s and the early 70s and maybe some years in council wars. It was kind of quiet on this front in the 90s and the O's, this sort of law and order debate. Let me back up a little bit. Napolitano and Spezzato, as we indicated before, are from the Northwest side. They wouldn't join Jason Ervin for a vote on a resolution. They voted no. I do not know why. I did not see their explanations in the newspaper. They are making fun of that incident. It goes together with Napolitano calling the bluff of the defund the police movement with his resolution. And he is being disrespectful to the positions of the Black Lives Matter protesters. And it is his way of mocking it. And I see this to one degree or another throughout the country, Dave, not just in Chicago. The most extreme case I've seen in recent days is a city councilman from some town, some city in Arizona. I don't know if you've seen this footage where he was making a speech as a white man. He's making a speech. He started the speech wearing a mask. And then while giving his speech, he said, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe." And then he took the mask off and everybody was laughing.
Yeah, that's really stark.
Yeah. So that to the far extreme, Napolitano is not there yet. But again, he wouldn't join with his colleague when his colleague made a direct appeal to him. Like, just vote to have the resolution calling for a commission to investigate something. I mean, what is that going to do? And then he takes it one step further with the popcorn in the background. Napolitano is a police officer. His ward is filled with police officers. I'm a big believer, Dave, in the collective bargaining rights of police officers. I stand with them on that 100%. I wish the city would get this contract settled with them. But I do not understand why the police officers, through their union, are pursuing the policies that they are. They've elected as their president an extremist, a Trump-loving extremist, and he is an extremist in terms of Chicago politics. Donald Trump is the most unpopular politician in the city of Chicago. I bet you he does not get 10% of the vote, maybe 12% tops in this coming election. So that's how out of touch the Fraternal Order of Police is with the people who they're policing.
But not with their members.
No, it's the members. At some point, people have to look in the mirror and go, am I making the right choice? You know, am I doing the right thing?
Well, the fact that they elected this guy, John Catanzara,
yeah,
he was elected in a race against the incumbent, Kevin Graham. Arguably, I think most people would agree with you that the winner of that race was the more politically conservative person, but he won.
Well, let me just go one step further. It was a runoff between two Trump supporters. So it wasn't like John was running against Ben, you know, a New Deal Democrat.
But my point is that the police officers who did vote, they showed where their inclinations lie.
Absolutely. And they showed it in the first round. Don't forget, Kevin Graham was running for re-election by virtue of the fact that he was supporting a Trump. He had a meeting in the White House where he was one of the police union leaders that met with Trump. He had a picture of himself with Trump. It's not as though the union chose a Trump lover over a liberal Democrat. They chose him over another Trump supporter. That just underscores your point. And just as a strategic point, I think might work to police officers' benefit if they try to be a little more accommodating with the people in the city of Chicago, at least politically speaking, at least symbolically. They obviously don't see it that way. And Napolitano is expressing their disdain for the prevailing political views in the city of Chicago, where most people, you know, are sympathetic to victims of police brutality.
He's not alone, Ben. It's interesting to note that there are 9 co-sponsors on this resolution for the reallocation pilot program. And let me read them to you.
Okay.
They're from all over the city.
Yes.
So the other one is Spezzato. Mm-hmm. We've talked about Nick Spezzato of the 38th. Also on the north side are Alderman Ariel Roboiras of the 30th, Felix Cardona of the 31st, Jim Gardner of the 45th. And on the south side, we have Ray Lopez of the 15th, Marty Quinn of the 13th, Ed Burke of the 14th, Derek Curtis of the 18th, and Silvana Tabarez of the 23rd. What do you think of that?
I'm not surprised by those aldermen being there. With the exception of Derek Curtis, there's no black alderman on that list. And let me point this out. This resolution that Napolitano proposed is calling the bluff of defund the police aldermen. And we've had your good friend Dan Lespada was on the show, along with Rosanna Rodriguez-Sanchez. Anybody wants to hear that interview, they lay out their argument for defunding the police. Carlos Ramirez-Rose has been on the show laying out his argument. Each one of those instances, I have taken issue with them. Because my years in the city of Chicago have shown me, Dave, that most people want police in their neighborhoods. The defund the police movement is completely unique to the city of Chicago. I've never seen anything like this. I'm curious as to where it will go. My guess is that ultimately it would not prevail in the city council on a vote. Napolitano knows that. He's sticking the needle in with that thing, with that resolution. It's politics. And by the way, just think about the resolution itself. It gets at sort of the same issue that's at stake with the vote that just took place with the Board of Education regarding police in schools. His resolution doesn't say to, let's say, Carlos Ramirez-Rose in the 35th Ward, you could take the money that was allocated to police and spend it on mental health facilities or social workers or people to go door to door during really hot days when there could be violence. No, the resolution says if you don't want police, you lose them. You lose the money that's dedicated to them and we'll take them. So the point of the, and that I think the name is the awkward name and it undercuts their mission. But the point of the defund the police movement, as you said, is to reallocate money. So it's not just not spend the money. It's instead of using money for police officers, use money for social workers or mental health workers. So when you just say, all right, we'll call your bluff. You want to defund the police? We'll take your police money. But they're not going to give you money for mental health workers. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, it's unfortunate with this cops in schools or school resource officers issue that the administration and the Chicago Teachers Union, instead of debating about whether or not to renew this contract that allows police to be in schools, that they can't get out of debating in the media and just sit down and try to come to a compromise like the one you're talking about, Ben, where, you know, if you give up the cop in a school, that you can use that money for something else. It seems like a really reasonable compromise to me.
I share that with you. When Stacey Davis Gates was on the show last week, I was asking her about that. I do not understand why Mayor Lori Lightfoot and Stacey Davis Gates cannot work together.
It is just so nuclear all the time. And it's always running at 10, you know, at the top of the scale. Oh, and by the way, on this resolution by Napolitano, I can tell you what happened to it. Mm-hmm. It was introduced for committee assignment at the city council meeting at the end of the meeting, and the city clerk designated it as being taken up by the public safety committee, at which point there was a parliamentary maneuver by Alderman Andres Vasquez of the 40th Ward, who said, no, I want it to go to the Committee on Budget and Government Operations, which means, as we talked about in a previous interview, it went to the Rules Committee, where many ordinances go to die.
Are you talking about that
the police reallocation ordinance?
Okay. Well, yes.
So one of the progressives used the old machine tactic of sending it to Rules.
If it comes out of Rules, then we know that Mayor Lori Lightfoot's joining up with Napolitano to really stick the needle in.
Well, speaking of which, actually, there was an ordinance from the last city council meeting that did get sent to Rules, got stuck there, and it gave the Rules Committee an opportunity to meet and get it out of committee. And this was a Lightfoot administration They call it a tenant protection ordinance, which is different from the one we just talked about. This one mandates notification of tenants when a landlord is about to kick them out. Opponents of the ordinance had protested that it didn't go far enough. So anyway, it got sent to rules by a parliamentary procedure at the May City Council meeting. So what we're going to listen to now is the chair of the Rules Committee, Alderman Michelle Harris, was giving a report on that very thing. There was some technical thing that happened. I think I've mentioned in the past that aldermen don't hold a roll call vote for each proposed ordinance. They often take a vote early on in the city council meeting, and then for subsequent proposals, they invoke that first vote. For this particular measure that Harris brought up, she proposed to do that, but someone pointed out that the council had actually not taken an earlier vote, and it made for a sort of entertaining moment, and let's listen.
Madam President,
yes, Chair.
I would have to amend my report because we actually used the most favorable roll call vote from finance. So
I think that's what's proper. Okay. Alderman, I would amend your motion, and then we will take a roll call vote.
So there's a motion to amend my report. So
I think we will have a roll call vote on that. So the motion, the vote is on a motion to amend the Rules Committee. Hold on, sir. Please, if you could, just be polite enough not to interrupt. Just a moment. Let me finish speaking. I see that your hand is raised, and I will call you. But we can't have people just talking out of turn because it will devolve into chaos. And if you would please be courteous enough to allow me to finish, I would very much appreciate it, Alderman Lopez.
Proceed, Madam President.
Oh, thank you so much.
I know that you guys have recently been having a lot of fun with the exchange, the recent other exchange between Alderman Ray Lopez and Mayor Lightfoot.
It's not something you ignore.
I think you're 100% full of shit is what I think. If you think
fuck you then.
Yes, that one.
I got to tell you, man, whenever I'm feeling down about how crazy, I just give me some Raylo and Lori Lightfoot, you know? But that was, that clip you had was beautiful. The sarcasm just drenching everything Lori Lightfoot saying, you know, sir, she goes, sir, if you could just sit down, shut up. Oh, my God, Raylo. Lori Lightfoot dislikes Ray Lopez even more than she dislikes Stacey Davis Gates.
This leads us into this last piece that is actually not from the June 17th City Council meeting. It is from the conference, which that clip that you guys have been playing repeatedly ad infinitum comes from. Though that is the most well-known, that exchange between Lightfoot and Lopez is the most well-known part of that. Many people don't realize that that conference, which took place on May 31st, lasted for an hour and 10 minutes. It happened after the first day of intense looting took place around George Floyd's death. The stated purpose of this conference was for the administration to update aldermen on what was going on in terms of public safety efforts after the first day of looting. It gave all of the 50 aldermen a chance to vent about what had happened in their wards and to ask questions. So as I say, it's over an hour and there's a lots of compelling audio, but I picked this one piece and let's listen.
Alderman Garza, I just want to tell you guys, my ward is a shit show. Cop cars burning, banks burning. We had to put the bridges up. And the mayor's right. The police can't keep up. And I know Michelle and Greg can attest. 4th District is huge and our police can't do it. They're shooting at the police. I have videos right across the street from my office of people shooting. Sorry. I've never seen the likes of this. And I want to tell you, this kicked off in my ward this morning at about 11 o'clock. It wasn't a protest. It wasn't anything like that. It was about 40 people that showed up in the dispensary lot. And a dispensary, most of you guys know, it's like Fort Knox getting in there. There was people trapped inside. They were trying to break down the front door. And they were calling the police. Police couldn't get there fast enough. The employees had to escape out the back door, and they got in. They got through 4 doors, bulletproof glass. They cleaned the place out, and then they just went from 85th and Commercial all the way down to almost 91st Street. And now they're by my office on 106. They're in Hegwisch. We had to close the roads coming from Indiana into Illinois. I've never seen anything like it. I'm scared. This is broad daylight. I don't know what night is going to bring. My question is, what are we going to do for tomorrow? Sorry.
Listen, Sue, I can't tell you how many times I've cried today.
I'm
terrified.
Some businesses are brand new. My whole thing is, I just want to make sure nobody gets hurt. And I mean, there's business owners now. I know I talked to a lot of you guys. There's business owners that are sitting there with fucking shotguns in their head because they're scared somebody's going to come. I put out an email. I called. My staff's been working all day. Tell them businesses close down, go home. Please don't stay open. I mean, what's going to happen tomorrow, Mayor Light? But what are we doing? And what is the role of the National Guard? Are they going to come to our wards? Or what's the thing? What are we doing here?
Sue, first of all, you're expressing, I think, sentiment that a lot of us feel. This is something that we've never experienced before. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around people destroying their own neighborhood.
They're shooting like it's a fucking wild, South. It's crazy. I got videos of, I have over 10 videos of people shooting at other people. Like, it's insane. Like, broad daylight, they're just shooting.
Again, we are trying to bring in as many reinforcements as we possibly can. We've canceled days off. The National Guard will free up resources so that we can put more resources in the neighborhoods where it's desperately needed. We also have almost 200 state police. We are looking at bringing in resources from surrounding suburbs, but the truth is they're having exactly the same problems that we are. This is a region-wide problem, and truthfully, it's a nationwide problem. Every city I know is experiencing the same or worse as we are. It doesn't make it any better, but it's helpful context. I can't explain the psychology of people being so reckless and ruthless and engaging in such blatant criminal behavior in broad daylight. But this is a massive, massive problem. And people are just fucking lawless right now.
Well, I think it's one of the things that's really important that we all are on the same message, right? We don't have to keep saying the same message, so...
Well, we're not on the same message. I'm sorry. We're not on the same message. Some of my colleagues are preaching that this is something of a genuine insurrection, and it isn't. This is about the city. The lifeblood of the city is just being taken out, and it's not right. If you're an elected official, and if you're saying that, that just cannot be right, and we have to call that out.
So that's a very stark description on the part of Alderman Sue Garza of the 10th Ward of what's going on.
Yeah, that's Sue Sidlowski Garza at her second term as alderman. And that was very moving, very powerful stuff from her heart. We've been playing the exchange between Raylo and Lori Lightfoot, and it seemed as though Raylo was deviating a bit and needling Lori Lightfoot. In terms of Sue Garza, I just felt she was speaking from the heart about a moment of desperation that her ward was facing. Dave, the reality is that we don't know. I've been thinking a lot about this. We as a city don't know what the strategy was in those first few days of rioting and looting and protests where everything was mingled together. And we had situations where so many police were guarding Trump Tower. There was so much concentration in the downtown area. And that's what set Lori Lightfoot off when Ray Lopez pointed it out to her. And Sue Garza did not make that accusation. She didn't talk about diverting police resources to the downtown area. She just spoke from her heart about what was happening in her ward. She didn't turn it into an accusation. So Lori Lightfoot clearly didn't feel threatened by it. I'm hoping that, I don't know, in the next few months or so, Chicago will do something that it very rarely does. And that is take a look back and seriously analyze, in this case, the response that the city had to the, rioting, looting, protests.
Disturbances.
The disturbances. What was the goal? What was the strategy? What was the purpose? How are resources distributed?
I heard a very interesting interview with former police superintendent Gary McCarthy the other day. he talked about specifically those things. So yeah, that, I think that narrative is going to start to come out.
Well, we'll see. Chicago has a great tradition of ignoring its problems.
Sweeping under the rug.
Sweeping. We started this show talking about the real estate practices that victimized black homeowners, wannabe homeowners in the 50s and the 60s, that we're still paying a price for. So I'm not going to put money down on the city doing a very systematic effort. I hope it were to happen, but I think already people are sort of pushing it aside and moving on.
Well, you know, we do have some outside scrutiny being brought to bear. Maggie Hickey, who is the monitor for the Chicago Police Department consent decree, has agreed, reportedly, to take a look at, in some ways, I'm not sure how all-encompassing her look is going to be, but in some ways she's going to look at how the response of the police department was to some of these disturbances. And she's not under control of the administration at all, as far as I could tell.
I welcome that. Yes, not to be under the control of anyone. Be as independent as you can. I just read an article, I think it was a Jill Lepore article in the New Yorker, about the grand tradition in our country, not just Chicago, but in our country, of doing investigations, reports, and studies after unrest, disturbances, riots, and then completely ignoring the reports, you know, once they're done. And she was in particular talking about the Kerner report, the famous Kerner report that was produced in the aftermath of the 67 riots.
One more point about this particular conference that we listened to an excerpt from. You know, Ben, you and I talk to aldermen pretty regularly. And over the past year, I've heard aldermen say repeatedly that they don't get enough dialogue with the Lightfoot administration. One of these aldermen said to me recently that they fear that one of the unfortunate fallouts from this hour and 10-minute conversation being leaked, it'll make the Lightfoot administration shy to have future such conferences. Because it was, as I say, an hour and 10 minutes, there was a lot of sharing and gut spilling, like you heard from Alderwoman Garza. And I think just from a good government perspective, I think it's helpful when our elected officials get together and figure stuff out. You know, that's a possible downside of all this stuff being publicized. And, you know, there's a whole other issue of whether it was even legal to have that meeting, whether it's in violation of the state's Open Meetings Act, which I won't get into. But I do understand this fear on the part of some that this will make it harder for that dialogue to take place in the future.
Well, that would be the typical Chicago reaction.
Oh, yeah. Circle the wagons.
Less transparency. First of all, the meeting was illegal. Look, Sue Sadlowski Garza poured out her heart. She was real. She was who she is. She's come on my show and dropped the F-bomb. She's known to drop the F-bomb. What's the big deal? If aldermen and the mayor, the lesson they take from this is to have less transparency and less cooperation, then that's just a classic Chicago. I can't believe that. That's what they're taking away from this, Dave?
Well, you know, they regularly do have the administration going back, you know, as far as you or I can think, probably, in terms of mayoral administrations, have always had mayoral briefings with aldermen. But they're generally of groups of around a dozen, as far as I can tell. You know, there's 6 to 10. If I recall correctly from the Open Meetings Act, it's 14 or 15 of elected representatives in a room is what triggers the requirement for it to be a public meeting. So somebody in the law department at the Lightfoot administration was out to lunch on this one, because that requirement of, you know, an open meeting being after a certain size is reached, I don't think it's an obscure rule, you know.
It's not an obscure rule at all. I do recall Daley and Rahm being a little more careful on this front when they did their little meeting. And I didn't like them when they did them. I remember meetings about the Olympics in the Daley years. They made sure there's like 7 guys in a room. All right, is that okay with the Open Meetings Act? You know, the things they do to avoid following the law is part of the problem.
Well, that's all I've got today, Ben.
Well, you did quite a job. That's a great job.
Thank you. Next city council meeting is on July 22.
All right. Very good. Dave Glowatz, thank you very much.
Listeners, we always welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions for future interviews. You can get those to us a number of ways. By email, send to contact@shygov.com. You can get to us via Facebook. That's at facebook.com/insidegov. That's inside G-O-V. And via Twitter, our handle is @CHIGOVT. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening. I'm the whining boy.
and I don't deny my